here on UCY.TV.
Yeah. Chat. Keep it alive through these lines I write. I keep it live cause I thrive. I might just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here, holding these days hostage. And I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this cause nothing compares, nothing can share. That same type of feeling when you're feeling them flares. They can't catch it, it's havoc, I rip to a tear. Switch a scenario, my stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah. Just nod your head with it, so explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it, no scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool, hear my heartbeat beat into the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind, oh no. It's ponderoso, dope so, no overdose cause it's dope. Yo man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow, down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd know we getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in. Full time to the 10. I'm on my clock, like I told you. I'm doing this for dreams.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Anti-Media Radio Show. Once again, with your host, Nick Burnaby, here on UCY.TV. Thank you all for tuning in. I'm really happy to be still alive and still be here with you, breaking down the news and hopefully decoding this mainstream media propaganda that we're being bombarded with at every angle, including on social media in particular nowadays. Unfortunately, it's getting a lot worse. Facebook was all over the news so far this week, and it's still ongoing. Facebook censorship is something that people in our community have been complaining about for years now, but it's something that we're finally seeing former Facebook employees breaking away and saying, "Hey, yeah, we've been censoring the Facebook community for a long time now." Now, the other thing, I saw an article today from The Guardian, and I think the headline was, "If you think the Facebook trending censorship is bad, wait till you see the news feed." And that's the thing that is really concerning, because the news feed is where everybody, is where everyone goes. It's like the homepage of the internet, more or less. And the news feed is basically run by an algorithm, and increasingly it's become harder and harder to figure out. This algorithm is very opaque, the policies aren't clear, and it affects all publishers, not just independent media, but publishers of all types. The anti-media has been fortunate enough because we've got great followers and a huge fan base and very active activists that are there sharing content. We haven't been too badly affected by it, but I know plenty of sites that have almost had to shut down because of it. So, keep that in mind. I think very soon we'll see some kind of alternative to Facebook, because, this kind of stuff just doesn't stand. This is, it's in 2016. This is the age of information. People don't, we're spoiled now with our information. We want it all the time. We want it free. We want it accessible. And Facebook goes and tweaks this news feed so much that it's like they're literally, the last news press release I saw from Facebook was that they're now using their algorithm to predict what stories people are in general are going to want to read. So they're no longer leaving it up to you. They're not saying, "Oh, well, let's allow this content to go in the news feed and see if they like it or not." They're predicting and saying, "Well, I know what, Facebook knows what you want to read now." And so that's all they're showing you. So basically the other problem with that is they're not showing any opposing viewpoints. So if it's like, there's stuff that you may not agree with, and Facebook's just going to say, "Okay, well, we're just not going to show them that information anymore." It's like literally putting your head into, sticking your head in the ground, but Facebook's doing it for you now.
It's a virtual safe space.
Yeah, I guess it's become so PC or whatever, and like we get our content reported on like a regular constant basis, pretty bad. Anyway, we'll talk some more about that on the show. We got a great panel tonight. First, my longtime co-host DB Schwartz. What's up, DB?
Not much, Nick. Hey, just to comment a little bit about how weird the Facebook algorithm is getting. It's now where you're getting these random trolls that are obvious trolls posting really sick crap on pages and getting those pages taken down instead of the actual profiles being blocked for it. I mean, this is how messed up it's gotten.
Yeah, that happened to Bernie Sanders not too long ago, to a bunch of his groups and a bunch of groups supporting him and stuff like that. Pretty interesting. These are the dirty tactics that are being, undertaken by people. And, we've been attacked recently by people waging false copyright takedown notices and stuff, and that'll affect you. It's people have weaponized the copyright stuff and content that's not even theirs. They can just say, they can tell Facebook, this person took my copyrighted work. Rather than Facebook contacting you and saying, hey, can you prove that this is your work? Because this person is saying that you took their copyrighted stuff. They just take down your content, take down your page, ban you from Facebook with no questions or no comments. You can't even, you can, in theory, you could try to dispute the claim, but it never works. Like, I've tried disputing these claims and it never, ever works. So it's just totally flawed system. But, it is what it is. That's why we need an alternative. We need something else. And I'm hoping that some genius soon comes up with something, because all the competitors out there right now, I hate to say it, they aren't that, they're just not going to compete with Facebook right now. There needs to be something new. Someone really, really, really smart needs to make it. And it needs to be – we need to come up with a new idea, because Facebook is going the same route as MySpace sooner or later, where – it's just profit extraction. I'm under the idea that maybe we should start treating the next social network as more of a utility, and maybe have a decentralized ownership, or everyone that is a member of the social media network is like an owner of it. Something where we can take the profit motive out of it, because that's what seems to mess up these social networks.
It should be for pay, for sure. It should be like $9.99 a month or something, dude, and include things like Netflix with it or something.
Yeah, man, Netflix, for real though, yeah. Or if it does have advertising, like I said, man, it's, community owned or something. I don't know. Facebook is just messed up, but, we've got to deal with it for now. And, that's where the majority of people get our information, our content, our memes, our articles, our viewpoints, our opinions. That's our main outlet, and so we're forced to deal with it, and we got to deal with what they're doing. Anyway, enough complaining about Facebook. We've also got the amazing journalist Claire Bernish on the line. What's up, Claire?
Not much. What's up?
Oh, nothing much. Just trying to break down all this news. We got a bunch of stuff to cover right now. But first of all, congratulations on being with us for a year. I know it's been a pain in the ass to put up with me.
No, it hasn't. Thank you.
So as of what, tomorrow, right? It's been a year that you've been a writer for the Anti-Media?
Yep, tomorrow.
And the very first article you sent to us went pretty viral too. And it was back during, I think it was like, what, just after all that stuff was going on in Baltimore, right? And you put out a report that was about how like a bunch of countries at the UN basically slammed the US for its police brutality tactics.
Yeah, it was 117 different countries took turns, like they each had a set amount of time, and they took turns getting up and basically kind of picking apart the U.S. for police brutality. It was rather epic. I was pretty glad I got the chance to write that. UN, still, it was kind of nice to hear even police state countries that are a lot worse than ours, like at the moment at least, really fascist countries, even got up and said, your police suck. So that was kind of nice.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It's like people from like dictatorships and stuff are like slamming us on police brutality. That tells you it's pretty bad.
Yeah, exactly.
And
nothing has really changed in a year, That's even worse and more telling.
Well, the only thing that's really changed is the public's awareness of it, really. And in the end, that's like the most important thing, because policies, you know, politicians don't change policies. Politicians don't do anything. They only eventually adapt to public pressure once it gets strong enough. And that's the same thing with like marijuana legalization. Politicians, we didn't elect politicians and they went up there and they're like, yeah, let's legalize. That's what we want to do because, you know, that's just the right thing to do. It's like an overwhelming majority of people are like, yeah, you know, we need to legalize at least medical marijuana. And so then finally the politician have to bend and they have to say, okay, yeah. Same thing with marriage, same thing with, you know, a lot of this stuff. It's, you know, it's just they have to bend to public pressure. We've also got Jake Anderson on the line tonight. What's up, Jake?
Not much. I'm trying to find this. There was an anti-Facebook alternative that was like, it was like before 2008. I can't remember the freaking name of it, but there's been a bunch of recent failures, Diaspora, AO, and when you start talking about it, I was kind of like, why is there not one legitimate alternative to Facebook right now? And Twitter doesn't count because Twitter, they're not the same thing. Twitter is like microblogging news service. Facebook is like, you know, curating people's lives. I mean, entire generations are now being raised on Facebook. I mean, I remember a time when I wasn't on Facebook, but teenagers that are on there now, when they get to our age, they won't remember a time without Facebook. So in a way, Facebook is kind of like curating their lives. And yeah, it's pretty disturbing that their algorithm is so kind of I don't know, draconian, is that the right word? But it's kind of creepy to me how opaque it is. Like you said, like you just know there's got to be some kind of social engineering going on that, because I don't know what you guys think. My Facebook news feed has been an absolute catastrophic mess for the last 2 years. Like somewhere along the line, they tweaked it, and I don't know what happened or what they did, but there's literally no rhyme or reason. I have no idea ever what I'm ever going to see when I open Facebook now.
I don't know, man. I've had to cycle through so many different Facebook accounts because all my accounts get banned because people can't handle their opinions being challenged anymore in 2016. That I don't even have a reliable set of friends or news feed because I'm literally juggling between four different Facebook accounts trying to get the ones that aren't banned. My main account just came off 2 months of being banned, and then it got banned another 3 days over a bogus copyright dispute. And you know, it's just it's really flawed the way they've set up that.
What are these copyright disputes you're talking about? Like, are you sharing?
It's literally this one troll, one guy, is going around and filing takedown requests against a bunch of different pages, and it's working. It's like majorly flawed, dude.
I didn't know there was a. How can you copy? I mean, when you share something. That's like the definition of fair use, to sharing content on a social network. I don't understand how there could be a copyright infringement.
Well, if you upload videos or pictures and stuff,
all right.
You know, and that's like I said, there's no legitimate way to dispute it. Even if it is your original content, you tell Facebook, hey, this is not right. This is my content. They never get back to you, and then you just got to deal with it. You know, so it sucks.
Yeah, same.
I think that's one of the worst parts about the whole Facebook reporting and their whole method of what they do is the fact that you cannot get a hold of anybody. You have no recourse whatsoever to dispute anything at all, ever. And that's really, really bad.
It's the same with Google, too. It's just this faceless, nameless order, this syndicate that you can never contact. Yeah.
Same thing goes on YouTube. And you know, on that topic of like alternative social networks, I mean, Google, the behemoth of the internet, tried to create a social media competitor with Google Plus to Facebook, and they failed with that too. I mean, it's still around, but nobody really uses it.
They tried real hard with that too. They were pushing that down our throats for like 5 years.
Yeah, I mean, they really like they made you like if you wanted to do anything with Google, you had to do it through Google Plus at a certain point, and it still didn't work. You know, so Facebook's got a really strong grip. Like I was saying, it's going to take something really ingenious to dethrone them. I just hope it comes soon. So we're going to be going off the outline here for the show. I got a couple of stories. First off is this awesome story Claire wrote today. And I mean awesome because it's written well, but it may not be the best news. 2016 elections prove America is really ready for totalitarianism. Claire, tell us a little bit about the inspiration for this article and what it's all about.
Well, so we've talked a number of times on air about how it seems like we're the country and even the world is kind of descending into fascism. And really there are some pre-steps, if you will, before that happens. And one of the biggest is the move toward authoritarianism, where it's kind of as if the rule of law becomes all-encompassing and all-important in the mood and atmosphere of the country and a little bit in policy. And that's, you know, with people kind of starting to tell on their neighbors and dictate the rule of law as if it reigns supreme of everything. I mean, we definitely see that shift. And beyond that, totalitarianism, when it begins to be the state creeping into lives to the point where it controls everything that we do, like policy and regulations and licensing and everything else. And I mean, it's just obvious. All you have to do is even just look through the site and you can see how policy is moving in that direction. And of course, in the leaders right now, we see that in Trump. I mean, I don't even really need to explain that, but we also see it in Hillary, where I guess both of them are kind of thwarting law to an extent, but also enforcing it. It's as if they're above the law, but they want everybody else, like all of the citizens and all of the politicians and everybody else, to stick to the law as closely as possible. And like our lives have to be as regulated and regimented as humanly possible. And this shift is really dangerous because ultimately you can, if it goes unchecked, you can end up with a dictator or a fascist of some sort in charge. And the shift is, I mean, it's monumental. It's very distinct and it's very monumental, but it's also been kind of sneaking in unnoticed by the masses, I would say.
Well, especially since 9/11, right? We've been having kind of the rule of law went out the window after 9/11 in a major way. And ever since then, kind of this huge surveillance.
Well, it's like the full court press. It's like the government's version of the full court press. I mean, we have like the massive surveillance programs. We have all of these things that are kind of, they're supposedly done sort of in the name of safety and security of the nation and stuff. But you also have undeclared wars. It's like the government has gone rogue. And when the government goes rogue and starts to act on its own and in its own interest and not in the interest of its citizens, and you see the government turning all of its attention toward the citizens' dissent, and instead of having an atmosphere of freedom of speech and kind of lax rules and stuff, you see the government turning on the people with like militaristic police and everything else. I mean, it's very, very clear if you just kind of look at the examples, you know.
Yeah, you got to take a step back and look at it, and then you'd see, oh shit, something's going on here, you know. And
yeah, exactly.
One of the big things you brought up here is the flouting of like the rule of law, and that's pretty much exemplified by Hillary Clinton, and her supporters as well as Trump's. There's actually like a personality test that someone did. I'm trying to remember the site. I think it was on Politico or something. And they did a personality test for like all the mainstream candidates and stuff. And yeah, it turns out that people that support Trump, I think like almost half of them had like very authoritarian leaning tendencies. And then Clinton was not much far behind that. And then Bernie Sanders supporters were actually like the least authoritarian, according to what I've read. So that's another interesting little caveat here.
Yes, but also you have to remember that Bernie Sanders, like his whole democratic socialist platform involves big, big government regulating every facet of life. So even though he might have seemingly benevolent ideals or intent with what it is that he's doing, it's still a shift in that same direction.
That's true, but I think the thing that matters here is like the supporters, you know, because Trump is, you know, if if Trump supporters didn't believe in authoritarianism or fascism and he got in, he started trying to act like a fascist, well, then he would go nowhere fast, right? And same with Hillary. But I think the good thing here with Bernie Sanders supporters, and you know, not even including Bernie Sanders himself or his policies, but the good thing about his supporters is that, you know, they may not be so well informed on the policies and stuff, but at least they don't have like authoritarian tendencies, right?
Right.
So yeah, that's interesting to say the least. I got another one of your stories here, Claire, that I want to talk about first. In fact, I think the top three stories are all yours here. First off, with Trump, there's an island in Ireland that is basically saying to Americans, hey, if Trump gets elected and you really want to get out of the U.S., come live here. And this story was pretty cool. I felt kind of bad reading it because this island is in like really bad shape, and I guess it's kind of interesting to see why their economy is messed up, and it's because of like emigration. There's too many people leaving the place, and it's destroyed their economy, right? And it kind of like is a wake up call to anybody who understands economics at all, and why Trump's ideals on economics, as far as deporting people and building a wall and stuff, is why those are like actually really, really bad ideas economically speaking, because that's going to like actually hurt the economy really badly. You know, this little island is like looking for people to move there to help boost their economy, and they're saying, hey, Americans, if you want to get away from Trump, come here. You can live free. And you know, Ireland recently went the way of Portugal, and they started decriminalizing all drug use, and so that's pretty interesting. But you know, it also is kind of a lesson in economics for the U.S. for all these people that think that we need to start deporting Mexicans to fix our economy, which I'll tell you right now is just very, very short-sighted, and people that buy into that are just falling for very emotional rhetoric that is not true or based in fact or based in any kind of historical data or any kind of economic model that exists. They all say that cutting off immigration and reducing your population is a bad economic idea. So this is pretty interesting. Tell us a little more about, you know, this island. I think it's called Inishturk.
Yes, it is, and it's about 9 miles off the coast of County Mayo, which, you know, who knows if I'm actually saying that right, but it's kind of a remote, deserted island. There are apparently 58 permanent residents on the island at this point. You know, they're kind of touting their very, very low student-teacher ratio, which is virtually one-on-one at this point. It sounds like, from what I was reading about it, this island is actually very friendly and very welcoming, and it's, you know, in the pictures I found from Twitter, it's absolutely gorgeous. They say the winters are a little bit rough, but that's okay because it kind of, the atmosphere makes up for it and there's lots of freedom, so it actually doesn't sound like that bad an idea. And they actually got their idea for this from the Canadian island that was offering kind of the same thing, Cape Breton Island in Canada. So, you know, there are all these countries out there, I was looking around, that are basically saying, come on over to us when Trump becomes president. So there are at least offers for people out there.
You know, and it may be kind of a lighthearted thing for now, but, you know, what the reality of the situation here in the United States is that we're dealing with an empire in decline. And when this empire finally declines badly, there's going to be a brain drain. All the people that have the resources or all the people that are smart enough to see the writing on the wall, they are going to leave eventually. And if the previous story that we're talking about the totalitarianism, fascism and stuff, if that stuff starts coming more and more realistic, and like we said, it already is, you know, there's going to be what's called a brain drain happening. And that's the same exact kind of scenario that brought Einstein to the United States. He left Nazi Germany before it got really bad because he saw the writing on the wall. You know what I mean? So this isn't some, you know, it is kind of funny to talk about it right now. Yeah, I'm going to leave if you know, Trump becomes president. But I'll tell you what, I, for one, am like literally taking this seriously. And it's not just Trump. It's also Hillary Clinton. I'm, in fact, more afraid of Clinton than Trump, because I'm worried she'll start a major regional war that may drag, you know, or restart the draft, or, you know, just make things even worse than I already feel they are. I already feel guilty paying taxes into the United States government when they're already bombing hospitals in Afghanistan and starving people in Yemen and causing civil wars in Syria and all these awful things they're doing over there. I already feel bad enough. Hillary Clinton comes in and makes it worse. Well, then I literally am probably going to leave this country, and I don't want to, but I will.
There are actually valid reasons to be really cautious when you have demagogues and these political characters like Hillary who are just kind of just flaunting law. They're just, it's like they don't care. When you have politicians or leaders or rulers, actually, who are in charge of so many people and they don't care at all what happens to the people they're in charge of, virtually anything can happen. And it's the people who leave early from situations like this, before the rise of, you know, a fascist dictator or something like that. It sounds a little bit preposterous right now, but it really is feasible. If you look at kind of the points that I was making in that article, these moves towards totalitarianism should not be necessarily taken all that lightly.
I agree. They shouldn't be. Because, you know, Hitler in Germany came about in a semi-democratic fashion as well. He was elected to public office, and then he usurped power using, you know, various tactics. And
all he did was use wartime tactics. I mean, all they have to do is just declare war. We haven't actually declared war since World War II, ever, not even once. So if they actually did it again, I mean, they could do whatever they want.
And things aren't always going to be as dramatic, perhaps, as the Holocaust. You know, I think when people look back at this time in history, I personally think that you know, our decimation of the Middle East and how many hundreds of thousands of people we've killed there since 9/11 with the war on terror, I think that will be looked back upon as a really egregious, tyrannical act of extended warfare. And, you know, yeah, it's not always going to be this, you know, dramatic, like 10 years later, 3 million people were dead. From the dictator that killed everyone. Like, it happens gradually over the course. I mean, we're witnessing a long-term American century of genocide.
It's the what was it? The Project for American Century. This is the mission creep that everybody said was going to happen.
Yep. Exactly. That's what I was going to say. Mission creep, dude. You know, it started off with, hey, we got to get revenge on these terrorists that messed us up. And now it's like, okay, Obama just started his eighth war in Yemen. He put boots on the ground in Yemen. No one's even talking about that. Media hardly touched it.
Saudi Arabia was getting its butt kicked, dude. That's what happened.
Everyone that invades a country is going to eventually get their asses kicked for the, you know, pretty eventually. Because you can't just pay some soldiers to go fight a foreign war and when you got a guerrilla army that you're fighting against of people that are actually defending their homeland. They're going to fight you forever from house to house. You know what I mean? You can't pay a guy enough money to fight that war. And, you know, it's impossible to keep morale high. I mean, look at the U.S. military. The morale is very low. People are committing suicide all left and right. I mean, because they're over there, they're not these guys in the U.S. Army – the Navy and, you know, all the guys in the U.S. military, they're now realizing they're not fighting for the United States. They're not fighting to defend their homeland. They're not fighting for our freedom. They're not fighting for anything. They're fighting for corporate empire, man. And they're realizing it. And it's impossible to maintain high morale. And you're never going to be able to win these occupations when there's a indigenous population there that's going to fight you tooth and nail. Go ahead.
Sorry. I was just going to say, I mean, if you'll notice too, I mean, not only have we not declared wars, but the government has ceased telling the people when it is that we actually arrive and start fighting in countries too. I mean, Yemen, we suddenly get this announcement that there are boots on the ground and they say, oh, well, we've had boots on the ground for 2 weeks. And if they're going to tell us that, then how long have they really had boots on the ground and what's really going on there? And is it really only, you know, a few dozen troops? Is probably not. And you know that that's not the only place that that's going on. It's all of these countries in the Middle East. It's probably you know, any number of other places too. It's the lies are so thick and so thorough and so numerous that it's impossible to keep track, and it's also impossible to know.
I think the answer since the end of World War II is we've always had boots on the ground everywhere all the time, and it's just special forces.
Yeah.
Yeah, or just occupying forces like in South Korea, Japan, the Philippines, Germany, Italy, I mean, all over Europe. But,
not,
you know,
not even counting how many, you know, private black ops forces are being deployed.
Yeah,
and that's fairly recent. You know, the privatization of these conflicts is pretty recent. It's the last 20 years or so.
Right. That could make an interesting article, actually, comparing tracing the rise of these private mercenary armies and whatnot. It's a pretty murky area that I certainly don't know a lot about. And
right at the end of the tech boom, Jake, is when we realized that was our last true economic wave, and everything after that was going to be a peak oil decline of the empire, and eventually the corporate masters, well, they don't want to give us free energy, so they're going to drag us into this last final war, right, for the last, you know, amount of profit they could string out of us, and then that was going to be it, and then they were going to all go to South America.
Well, if you look at, you know, there's a reason why every empire that's ever existed has crumbled, right? They're all gone, except for, I mean, you know, the U.S. is only the latest reincarnation of the empire. The last big one to fall was the USSR, you know, and every empire falls, man. Every single one of them throughout history has fallen.
Sometimes by design, too. I mean, Rome fell by design so that Persia and China wouldn't gang up on them and they just relocated to London.
Yeah, and, you know, the thing is that you can never hold that much territory for that long, man, because the indigenous populations are always going to beat you back. You know, they're nickel and dime you, and it's the slow war, the guerrilla war, you know, and that frustrates the hell out of the people, and then there's overreactions, and then there's rebellions, and, you know, this is just typical stuff that happens throughout history, and people need to start remembering history. I think that's the biggest problem in the goddamn world right now, is people don't want to remember all the mistakes that have been made. And I'll give it to our past generations. They didn't have the information. You know, people that were around before the invention of the printing press, you know, information was hard to come by. But nowadays with the internet, man, and if you got some semblance of free speech, you got no excuse to not know about all this stuff that's gone on in the past, you know, because if you don't, then, you know, unfortunately, it's your own fault.
And if you watch, TV, you're actually misinformed.
I think it might be a little bit different, though, too. I don't necessarily think that it's history is forgotten. I think it's more that people think that it's going to be different this time, or because it applies to them in this particular situation, it's going to be different this time.
Well, yeah, like, this time around, the politicians aren't going to be assholes, right?
Right.
This time around, our emperor is going to be nice. He's going to be a fair emperor. He's not going to be like Caesar. He's not going to be like Alexander. He's going to be more like, you know, someone benevolent. Oh, I'm sorry, but emperors and empires are always extremely violent. Yeah, exactly. You're right, though, Claire. I think people just don't want to believe it, I think, is part of it, too. But I mean, it goes back to this, even this idea of like representative democracy. This is an idea that's been experimented with since the Greeks. I mean, since BC, and then the Romans. And every time, if you look at representative democracies, every single one of them has pretty much turned into a dictatorship after a while, right? I mean, the Greek Empire, the Roman Empire, I mean, over and over, it's like from democracy to dictatorship, back to democracy, and then back to dictatorship.
It's because they're representing the human nature. Human nature is, you know, what's that song, Everybody Wants to Rule the World? I mean, I don't want to take it back to that 80s song, but I do think there's a... What's that? Is that a... God, is that Foreigner?
Tears for Fears, I think.
Tears for Fears, yeah, that's right. Is. Everybody Wants to Rule the World. Can we cue that up and play it, Nick? No.
No. No.
Because we'll get hit with a copyright request to take our show offline.
But it's kind of true, though. Like, and with regard to your previous question, yeah, I don't think it's so much that people have forgotten history. Everyone is aware now, or a lot of people are aware of, you know, what happened with, you know, indigenous people on this continent and you know, what we've been doing abroad. They just don't care. I mean, most of the people here, and we could argue reasons for that. There's a lot of conspiracy theories as to why people don't care, but people just seriously, they don't care here. They don't care that other people get killed for no reason. They don't care.
Well, I mean, a lot of that has to do with like American exceptionalism and stuff, and you know, right. it also maybe not just American, but I mean, we talked briefly about this last show about France and stuff. And God, do you know any Americans that actually give a shit about the French or about France? I don't. In fact, most Americans I know think France is a bunch of pansies and they're a bunch of pussies that we had to bail out in World War II, right? That's what everybody says. And yet, when the terror attack hit Paris, it's like, oh my God, all of a sudden we give a shit about France. But it was like just a couple days before that there was some huge terror attack in like Pakistan or somewhere in the Middle East, and nobody gave a shit, you know? So I think part of it is the American exceptionalism, and, you know, as long as it's other people getting bombed, it's like whatever, at least it ain't us. And then on the other side of it, I don't know, I think part of it is media manufactured by the media and like, oh, we should care about Paris maybe because they're part of our empire, they're part of NATO.
And you know, it fits the narrative too.
It's also psychological. There's an actual psychological basis for the reason why, you know, certain groups care about certain other groups and not others. I mean, it's actually psychologically based. But that doesn't mean, it doesn't justify it, and it doesn't give it any validity.
Who knows? I mean, it's so complicated, I think. And, you know, I guess we'll find out. I don't know how or what, but, yeah, there's definitely a huge, like, just difference between what we care about and what we don't care about.
You're leaving?
And I mean, it's sorry that caller didn't have their mic muted. Hold on. Let me announce our basic rules for our people calling in. I forgot to announce the call number too. If you do call in, the number is 718-717-8296. You can join the call, talk about what we're talking about or what you want to talk about, or I'll ask you a question. You never know. It's like lottery around here, except you have a way better chance of winning. But if you do call in, mute your microphone and mute your radio or your computer or your phone or whatever behind you so that we don't hear it, because it makes it sound really weird. Anyway, other than that, I don't know. This is a really interesting discussion, though, and I kind of want to keep going on it.
Classic.
Okay, that was one of you guys. Okay, that wasn't the radio show playing it. That was one of the callers. Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't realize I was on.
Oh, no.
That was perfect.
You're fine. It wasn't you. I think it was someone else. okay, there we go.
Thanks, Jake.
We're being joined by a caller now from 860 area code. How's it going? You're on the Anti-Media Radio Show. What do you want to talk about tonight?
Hi, Nick. This is Stephanie Pittock. We were just chatting for a few seconds about Global Debo, and you asked me to give a call in.
Oh, yeah. So thanks for calling in, and it's nice to talk to you. So there's a movement going on that started in France. I think, Claire, you actually covered it a little bit. Stephanie, why don't you tell us a little bit about this? Because this is pretty big over in Europe, and now I guess it's coming to the United States, right?
I'm trying to bring it here. I'm officially Nui Debo USA, Facebook and Twitter. About 10 days ago, I discovered a little rumblings on Twitter, and I did a little investigation and found out that March 31st, there were about 400,000 people in Paris for the first mobilization, and they named it Nui Debo, Rise Up at Night, They aren't occupying, like, camping. They're going every night at 5 o'clock in the squares all over France. They've had it with the 1%, and they're telling them where to go. And they're hoping that it catches on worldwide, and I'm trying to help it catch here.
So what's this movement all about?
Anti-austerity, you know, the same, what we've been screaming out about for years now, the same old, you know, enough is enough.
It
was born out of the labor movement. The French government has gone, the president, without going to parliament, has gone and put in some revisions to the labor policies that directly affect the workers negatively, and they're very angry. But out of that has born a whole entire movement against anti-austerity in general.
Awesome. So how can people find out about this and get involved in it?
Okay. The best thing to do, come to Facebook, Nuit, NuitDeboutUSA, Nuit Debout, French, Nuit Debout. Twitter is a great to keep abreast of everything. Global Debout is the hashtag, and Nuit Debout. I attended a conference online this past weekend. They had an international gathering of everybody, and that was amazing. We talked about everything under the sun, and the basic conclusion is we have to all rise up and in mass, and they can't refuse it. I mean, there's 7 billion of us, 400 of them. Enough. We have the numbers on our side.
Seriously.
And we're all connected with the internet now.
Grossly outnumbering the oligarchs that are, like, running the show. I did an article recently on the anti-media. I forget what it was exactly about, but I did a little bit of the math. And, you know, in the United States, we've got, like, 500-ish, like 600-ish federally elected politicians. And then you got, like, another 500 billionaires. And then you got, like, 330 million people in the United States. So, I mean, we're outnumbering these oligarchs, like, 300,000 people to one.
Right.
And if there was, like, a legitimate mobilization of a good chunk of the population, I mean, nothing would be able to stop them. But, you know, from my experience, it's hard enough to get, like, 1,000 people to show up to a protest, you know, because Americans, I don't know. We were talking about that a little earlier. You know, it's so hard to get Americans to give a shit about anything, almost.
Well, I think with Bernie and getting people to go to rallies and the anti-Trump people, like I am, we're all fired up. And I think people have realized that their voices have been marginalized so much that the only way now is to really get in the street. I mean, I've been with Occupy Wall Street since day one. I ran for Congress this past year, but I had to stop because I wasn't getting any money. I did it. I knew I was never going to be able to raise $1 million. I knew that going in, but I gave it my best shot. I got my name out there, and now I have a connection to Bernie's senior advisor, who I email on a regular basis things that he needs to see. Whether he wants to see them or not, I don't know, but I think he should see them. And he hasn't blocked me yet, so at least I know he's seeing it. So, I mean, I feel I'm doing everything in my power. My limited personal, I mean, all I have is my mouth, and that's all I've used. And I've been pretty successful, and I'm going to keep using it, and I'm going to keep amplifying, and I'm going to give everybody voice, because we all deserve to be heard.
That's awesome. So yeah, thanks for calling in. Make sure you guys go check out, I'm really bad at French. So let me see if I can get this. Okay, cool. Yeah. I'm like really bad with my French. Stephanie, thank you for calling in, and, I'll send some people your way, and hopefully we can get something started here in the United States. I mean, we need to get people out there and, like, voicing their frustrations, because we outnumber them grossly. It's, like, ridiculous. It makes me sick to see what's going on with so
I can't take it. I mean, like you were saying, if Trump becomes president, I mean, I've already looked into Belize. They're English speaking. They take the dollar. I can drive there from here. I mean, it's all good. It's on the Caribbean. I'm checking in. So
there you go. Everyone's starting to make their concession plans.
That's, you know, the only thing, their internet isn't that great, but I think at this point, quality of life is better, and the quality of life in this country is just getting worse and worse by the second.
It is. That's why there is this rising tide of people that are supporting Bernie Sanders and supporting Donald Trump as well.
Right.
It's, you know, a bunch of people are kind of had gotten used to growing up having a decent standard of living, and now everything's so expensive, and the wages have not only stagnated, wages are shrinking when adjusted to like inflation and stuff. And people are like looking for answers, and I think this election is the final frustration. And if it goes the way that I'm thinking it goes, which is to Hillary, I think there's going to be a big sea change in the way things are done around here in the United States, and people are going to be pretty much fed up, and I think they're finally going to start caring. I don't know, maybe I'm wrong, but you know, that maybe that's what's going to happen. I guess we'll have to see. Steph,
well, I'm hoping that we can start caring before then, because I think if we can get California this landslide, and we could, I mean, Bernie still does have a narrow path, as narrow as it may be. I mean, I'm not giving up hope yet, you know. I would really, I mean, we need him, the climate change. I mean, we're going to say goodbye to the planet. I mean, this isn't just an election for people. This is the damn planet. And we're looking at annihilation of our habitat, and we won't be able to live here. We don't have a planet B. Come on, people.
Yep, exactly. Stephanie, thank you for calling in. We're going to have to move on to our next topics here, but I guess everyone could check out that movement. I don't know. I mean, I hope that something happens before the election. I'm not as optimistic. I think, unfortunately, I don't know if it's human nature, what it is here in the U.S. that's going on, shit's going to have to get worse before it gets any better. Unfortunately, we've talked about this before. Anyway, moving on here. People, I guess, you know, we're not the only ones talking about getting the hell out of here if Trump gets elected. And as I said, if Hillary gets elected, I honestly, it's even more of a imperative. But if you guys
should go to Mars.
What was that?
Forget just leaving the U.S. Let's get off the Earth. Let's go to Mars.
Well, that's what Stephen Hawking was saying, man. He's like, you guys got to get off this planet because these assholes are going to destroy the whole thing.
The moon is a harsh mistress. Let's form a libertarian utopia on the moon, dude.
There you go. If you follow the website, theantimedia.org, and I'm just going to remind everyone listening tonight, make sure you go to our website every day. You don't have to, but if you want to see the news that we're covering, because like I said at the beginning of the show, Facebook tailors its news feed, and you know what? They're trying to predict the shit you want to read, so there's going to be a lot of stuff that you're going to miss on Facebook because they're just not going to show it to you. If you want to see all the stuff we're covering, go to our website, subscribe to our newsletter. We're sending it out tomorrow. Every Thursday, we're sending out the newsletter with our top stories, and you know, you can go from there. But make sure you go to our website because that's where you're going to find our stuff, all of our original content, aggregated content from our partner news sites. But anyone that's been following us closely knows that we've been covering Hillary Clinton relentlessly because she is by and far the worst candidate in the race. Claire wrote another article that we covered on the anti-media yesterday regarding the Hillary email scandal and how employees of the Department of Justice are funding her campaign. I mean, this is like the branch of government that's supposed to be investigating her email scandal, and a bunch of the people that work there have sent the max amount of money that they can to the Clinton campaign. Claire, can you tell us a little bit about this?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, people are allowed to give to whomever they want to, but this can't be described as anything but a conflict of interest. They're supposed to be investigating her for some rather serious potential crimes, and yet they're giving the maximum amount. I mean, how many was it? 228 people gave the max, which is $2,700. and they all listed Department of Justice as their place of employment. I mean, that is just a flat conflict of interest. How can we possibly expect any justice to be served, for her to face any charges whatsoever for any number of crimes she's committed, if the people who are investigating are supporting her? I mean, it just doesn't, this is just not good.
Yeah, very huge conflict of interest. So, I mean, this, I've never really had any faith in the fact of her getting indicted for her crimes. And, you know, the email stuff is the least of it. I mean, it's what's being found in the declassified emails is what's even worse. I mean, there's war crime stuff in there. And any regular individual, or if it were some belligerent country that did this kind of stuff, I mean, these are the kind of people that they try to arrest and charge them with, you know, high crimes and execute them. And Clinton kind of just gets away with this stuff.
There's this, she's also being investigated for the Clinton Foundation, though, too. I mean, they're actually trying to figure out how, where all the money is going, because the, you know, the Clinton Foundation and Global Initiative has so much money dumped into it, and then political favors seem to pop up in foreign deals and such. So they're, that's also the subject of an investigation right now, and it has not been very widely publicized, so.
Yeah, and she the Clinton Foundation took a bunch of money from the Saudis, and you know Clinton is running on this platform of justice for women, and the Saudis, I mean, they're barely starting to let women drive in that country. They don't even allow them to vote. They don't allow them to do anything, really. You can't even leave the house without having a male family member escort them out. And you know, so this faux Hillary Clinton feminism that's perpetuating out there, and Donald Trump has become like the antithesis of Clinton because he treats women like crap and stuff. I mean, this whole election is bullshit. If you haven't figured it out by now, I mean, the whole Trump Clinton dynamic is just total bullshit. I mean, Trump used to fund Clinton. I mean, come on, let's get real here. Everyone acting like Trump is some kind of outsider and anti-establishment. I mean, go get real, man. Do some research. It's not he is not anti-establishment. In fact, he just named he just basically said that he may take Rudy Giuliani on. Was it for VP or something like that? I forget what it was.
He'll do whatever he'll say anything. He'll do anything to win this election.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so will Hillary. So, may the best hacker.
Like Homeland Security, I think. I think Giuliani was for Homeland Security. That's what Trump wanted.
Yeah, there you go. So that's exactly what we want, right? Giuliani for Homeland Security. Oh man,
he did such a good job.
He did a great job. He'll win. There's this funny clip too where it's Trump and then Giuliani's like dressed up in drag. Have you guys seen that? I don't even know what the hell it's about, but it's like Trump and then Giuliani and drag, and this is real. It's like some kind of advertisement.
Is that a home video, Nick? Or?
No, it's not a home video. It's like some kind of advertisement. And Trump like put his face in Giuliani's fake breasts. I have the clip here. It's just ridiculous.
I wonder what Giuliani's response to Donald Trump's trutherism is, because Donald Trump is borderline 9/11 truther, and Giuliani is, you know,
insider.
Yeah,
Giuliani is Giuliani.
Well, he's touted that as like his. I mean, that pretty much launched him onto the national scene.
Yeah, his toughness on 9/11. Yeah. Oh yep. Man, just ridiculous. Anyway, follow the anti-media for the Hillary corruption stuff if that's your thing. Yesterday, we had this Budweiser coming out and renaming their beer America. And this is kind of funny. I actually wrote an opinion piece on this with S.M. Gibson yesterday. And it also ties back into this whole political atmosphere going on right now. And I'm just going to quote here from the article that I wrote. Budweiser exemplifies the very reason outsider candidates Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders have caused such a huge wave. Sorry, I can't even speak tonight. Budweiser exemplifies the very reason outsider candidates Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders have caused such huge waves this election season. Just a few years ago, the brewer was quietly sold to a foreign multinational company based in Belgium, the same one that makes Stella Artois. You see, Budweiser now represents the offshoring or selling out of the American economy. Budweiser, once an icon of the American dream, was sold off to the highest bidder with little fanfare. They're responsible for over 50% of the beer sales Budweiser is in their offshoot brands. But now they're owned by AB InBev, which is that Belgian company. But, you know, it's kind of funny because Budweiser wants to name their beer America. They're not even owned by an American company anymore. And they're, like, outsourcing jobs, and they're using monopolistic tactics to try to shut down or, like, overtax the craft brew company. And so it's kind of funny because this whole article is kind of about how Budweiser really is becoming representative of America, at least what America's become, where it's monopolistic, it's overly regulated, it's overly taxed, it's you know, talking shit. They're trying to Budweiser also put out an ad where they're trying to say anyone who drinks craft beers are basically just a bunch of hipsters that would rather look at their beer instead of drink it. And yeah, I mean, it's just really crazy that they want to name their beer America, because it's just so painfully ironic, I guess you could say. But I think they should just call it America, just with an M, no A at the beginning, you know.
I truly can't believe it. I thought that was fake news when I saw. I can't believe that's real.
And the other thing, and this is the part that I thought was gonna, like, piss people off, but it didn't. What Budweiser has also come to represent is mediocrity, because it's a crappy beer. No one likes it. I mean, I guess a lot of people like it because they control 50% of the damn market, but it's crap beer, man. It's like, I saw this funny headline from, like, it was either The Onion or Clickhole or something, where it's like, America will be the beer that you'll take if there's nothing else available. But, you know, the basic conclusion I came to here was that, you know, there's a huge new industry in craft beer. I don't know if you haven't noticed it, then you're probably not getting out enough, because there's, like, breweries popping up everywhere all around the country, and there's all kinds of craft local beers everywhere. As of 2014, craft brew industry added $55.7 billion and 424,000 jobs to the U.S. economy in 1 year. So, you know, it's a huge bustling industry. And so the whole point I was making here with this article was that, in fact, it's the craft brew industry that is truly representative of American values. And Budweiser is basically what, you know, the America that is now, you know, it's Trump's America. It's Hillary's America. It's the America that we're becoming that we don't want to be. You know, that if that is the America that we are becoming, then we're in deep shit. We're in trouble. Because that's, you know, this is what people are starting to not, you know, people are sick of it. People are sick of the outsourcing. People are sick and tired of big business. People are sick of monopolies. You know, they're sick of these backdoor dealings. And that's what Budweiser is now representing. You know, on the surface level of it, it's just a beer. Yeah, but the company itself is, it's unfortunately just part of that one percenter category that we're all growing to dislike at this point. So yeah, I mean, it was kind of a fun article for me to write, for sure, but it really is serious. And I think that this whole Trump phenomenon and the Bernie Sanders phenomenon is kind of plays into this whole thing, because I think people are ready for this America first attitude, as flawed as it may be coming out of the mouth of Trump and maybe with the policies of Sanders. It doesn't matter how flawed these guys are. I think the attitude is there. People are tired of this crap, and they want to do something about it. That being said, that was the Anti-Media Radio Show for tonight. Catch us again on Monday. We have other hosts Monday through Friday here on UCY.TV, theantimedia.org. Yo, here we go through the stereo.